You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks, and it's Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And this week we're going to be talking with an NGO, a registered charity named Healing Colombia. So we're talking with Alice Dow, one of the directors. She's been here forever in Colombia. And we're going to be talking about her new project, along with her husband, Agustin, who's from Argentina. Alice is from the United States. And they have set up something that we see a lot in New York and various cities in the United States, and indeed in London, in the United Kingdom. And that's the mentor program. So we get people, Colombians, not only Colombians, but also expats living over here in Colombia, committing to a year of working as a mentor for children, adolescents in more, let's say, difficult situations, from more humble backgrounds. And of course, this is very important because it gives them the opportunity to learn that this is not their lot in life. You know, there is more out there. They can break the glass ceiling around the sort of, let's say, the social strata system in Colombia. So we're going to be talking with Alice all about this and how she came to be in Colombia, what she's doing now with the mentors, how she looks for mentors, and indeed how you can get in touch if you are interested. Of course, this is not for everyone. This is not something that's lightweight. You have to be committed for a year. That's a year of visiting some very down-at-heel barrios in Bogota, seeing some poverty probably unlike you've ever seen before. And of course, being exposed, I think, to violence and, you know, after a while, when these people start to open up, probably tales of abuse, tales of a lack of education, and tales of a lack of basic needs, such as running water and other things. So I'm hoping this might become a sequence, a series of interviews with various NGOs talking about the situation in Colombia and what they're hoping to do. Now, it's very exciting to have Alice because here on the show, because it's a small NGO, and so you sort of know that everything goes to, it travels down the right path to the people who most need it. So we'll be talking about this, and stay tuned, listen in to hear an inspiring story about, you know, basically an Argentine-American couple making a difference here in Colombia. Now, that's important. And so we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back, and we'll be talking to Alice Dow here in Bogota about Healing Colombia. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away.
Are you looking for your next retirement destination, just not sure where? What benefits do you have or don't you by living abroad? Is the international real estate market safe? My name is Domingo Silva, CEO of Escape Artist, the premier authority on international living, and we're having our first annual conference in Orlando, Florida, October 10th to the 12th. Come and get the answers you've been looking for and so much more. For more information, go to overseasradio.com and click on the conference banner. See you there.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, as they love to say. And like every week, we have very special guests on the show here. And we're talking to an American, a US citizen, Alice Dow, from upstate New York, but she's been down here in Columbia for some time now. And, you know, as always, as in over the year that we've been running this show, it's always about inviting people on who are doing things, who can contribute to Colombia or who can tell us something about Colombia. And it's safe to say that Alice can tell us a great deal about Colombia and is doing a great deal to improve Colombia with her, I think, unique vision on things. So, Alice, welcome on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard.
Well, now, Alice, you're from upstate New York. Let's talk about what brought you originally down to Colombia.
Well, I left the United States long time ago.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I was, a traveler, an adventurer, and a searcher, seeker. Mm-hmm. I ended up in Europe studying art and music in Florence, Italy. A few years, but I had serious existential questions.
Okay.
And at that time, of course, that was back in the day, in the 60s, 70s, beginning of the 70s. It was a good time to be globe-trotting.
And a good time to be existentially aware.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Yes.
And so when I came across the... I went to North Africa and traveled through Spain and southern Italy, and I became aware of the level of poverty suffering, which I had never been exposed to previously in my upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
There were things I'd seen on television but or read about, but never really seen face-to-face. So when I saw that, I felt that, well, I wanted to find a way to make the world a little bit better. Put my little bit of my grain of sand to make life easier for people who have less.
Okay. But so, so you had this, let's say, existential, you were inward looking, outward looking, you were exposed to, a poverty that, of course, those of us who are raised in, let's say, developed nations, I don't like to say underdeveloped, but developed or developing or what they call now a civilized world, and this eventually over time, you made your way to Colombia.
Yes, yeah. I went to South America, where I met my husband, Agustin, who is the director of the foundation. We're both musicians, we're both idealists, and although we come from culturally diverse backgrounds, we found that we had many things in common, especially in music and their search for sort of a mission-driven mentality. And so that was the beginning of a long journey that we've had as a family. We have two children that were born in Argentina. And we decided we wanted to come to Colombia. A friend of ours invited us about 16 years ago. Was there with you?
So 16 years ago, that was the bad old days. I mean, Colombia was a different prospect to what it is now.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about, let's say, what that would have been. We look at 1998. Yeah, so what was 1998 Colombia? When you arrived from Argentina, I suppose.
Argentina, yes.
You know, so Argentina was 1998. It was still fine before, there wasn't the economic crisis yet in Argentina. Because I was there when they started burning tires in, 2001.
Right.
I was taking photos and so on. That was pretty exciting.
Yes.
But 1998, Colombia had, the reputation was pretty poor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I, being a foreigner, I couldn't really leave Bogota, and as I was very well escorted, because at that time, of course, we know the ups and downs of the subversive groups and their maneuvering of the country.
Yeah.
And so my, I, as a foreigner, wasn't really able or free to leave Bogota very often. But I loved the culture, I loved the people, and I felt it was, the people were special, they were sensitive, they were, so vulnerable, and at the same time so able to be joyous, and I can remember the first Colombian party I ever went to. Everybody stood up and started dancing salsa, and it looked like they had been, professional dancers their whole lives, and I couldn't. I'm a musician, and so that was impressive for me. But Colombia was dangerous at that time.
Yeah.
And all of the, what you hear about it. But you know what? Nothing has ever happened to me in Colombia.
This is fantastic.
16 years I've been here, and I've been all over the country. I've never had a kind of experience where I can say, oh, no, don't go to Colombia. It's dangerous. No, never.
Never. That's very reassuring, and especially for those listeners out there considering coming today, 2014, 16 years later, when, we were just discussing off mic our feeling towards Colombia, and there's positivity taking place. There is change. Even in the 8 years I've been here, you can tell there's a difference. We may not, regardless of the politics or religion or class, something is happening here, and that's the truth. So I think it's really interesting, and obviously you as a musician, I mean, Colombia is a vibrant country. And when you say about the salsa, everybody dancing salsa, was this something that you already knew how to do? You
no.
could dance salsa, but now, of course, you can, 16 years later.
Well, I do my best.
I'm a dreadful dancer.
Well, I had been in Argentina for many years, but the Argentinians aren't the same in that sense.
No.
They think a lot and talk about, you know, how they want to change the world, and they're not so much into dancing, into, you know, that kind of partying.
No.
They do a different kind of partying. They're wonderful in their own way. But the Colombians just have this spontaneous charm about them that, for example, at Christmas time, they have 9 whole days from the 15th of December on to the 24th. Every family will celebrate what they call the novenas, which is the Christmas celebration for baby Jesus. And we were, because we're musicians, we were invited to sing one of the first Christmases that we came to Colombia. We were invited to a very traditional, formal Colombian family, and you know they can be very formal
very
and traditional.
Formal. Yes.
And very shy. And so they began to pray, and we were singing Christmas carols, and they were praying. The whole family was praying. The little children was praying to baby Jesus. We thought, what devoted people. This is, and then they brought out the aguardiente, which is the national drink here.
Fire water.
Yeah, the fire water. And then they started to party. And so it was the two contrasts of the very devoted, traditional, even childlike sort of, how do you say, worship, devotion. And then all of a sudden the partying. And that's sort of a way to describe Colombia.
It's kind of like what they say here, rezando en pecando, like who prays and sins ties, you know, it's a draw, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
El que reza y peca empata.
Right.
So that's it, yeah.
Right, right.
But I love that about the novena. I have got a quick anecdote about the novenas. It's in my little town of Mompós, where I have the hotel, the novena, the 9 days leading up to Christmas Eve, is celebrated with mass at 5 in the morning. No, about, I think it's 4:30 in the morning, something like that. And so you get the sort of more religiously inclined people, of course, getting up at that time. But then as soon as mass is over, there is a pagan ritual of fireworks and playing football with burning footballs. So it's like soccer in the plazas with multiple burning footballs. And you can only imagine that this appeals to every adolescent in town. There's nothing greater than playing with fire and football. I mean, you know, it's terrifying. And my hotel is right on the corner of where they play. And the first year that we were open, I had to fling a child onto the roof to get this burning football off. Because, but anyway, that's the novena. So yes, they pray, and then they're out there destroying everything.
Right.
so a little bit of a digression there. But listen, about your music. So you came with Agustin, your husband, and was the first thing after you decided you were going to live here, the idea was to set up your foundation?
Yes, we came to Colombia. We had no intention to stay permanently. But it was sort of love at first sight. We then went to the United States for a year, and my husband was offered a job in one of the big prisons right outside New York to work with a Latin American. There were about 6,000 young Latin Americans in that prison. Of course, they were there for drug, you know, drug-related issues. And they wanted my husband, who's a life coach and a musician, a music therapist as well, to work with these young people in the prison. But we just couldn't forget Colombia. And we were in New York with our two adolescent children, and we didn't want to bring our children up there in New York either. We didn't feel it was the right context at that time. And although Colombia's a dangerous country and it had this stigma, but the charm and the warmth and the friends and the family-oriented culture, the honesty, the joy, drew us back. We felt safer here than we did in New York.
That's saying something. I mean, that's a real statement for those out there who are you know, worried about Colombia. And so, and really positive. Really, you know, even just your words. But I'm of course looking at you here, and you can tell there's a joy here. You know, you've made a home. You're not thinking of leaving anytime soon.
No.
Okay. So 16 years later, it's still great.
Yes, yeah. It is.
But you're going from project to project, and you set up your foundation, Healing Colombia. And so for those of you out there listening, you can check out this foundation. It's www.healingcolombia.org. And there's all sorts of projects. But what were the first projects that you started out with? How did Healing Colombia begin?
Well, Healing Colombia began with the earthquake in Armenia.
Oh, no.
When that earthquake happened, we rounded up a group of about 17 young kids. Some of them were foreigners, some of them weren't. And we took them all to Pereira, Armenia, mm-hmm. where the earthquake happened. I don't know how many people died in that earthquake.
Right. Thousands.
It was devastating. Mm-hmm. And so we had this group of young people, and they helped to manage the warehouses that were, you know, giving out the food and the water. And actually, they did a great job organizing mm-hmm. things when there was looting and disorganization, and people weren't getting their needs, and these kids really went to bat for the mm-hmm. for the community, and helped the army to distribute all of that food and help those people. Mm-hmm. And then when that happened, we my husband Agustin approached the mayorship in the north of the city where we were living at that time in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
And he approached it, just things about destiny. I believe in destiny. You know, sometimes things happen and it's a chain of events, and then another thing happens. And he began to listen to the meetings going on in the local mayorship mm-hmm. and ask if there were any projects or for young people, for teenagers. And now my husband comes from a past of drug addiction, and mm-hmm. You know, he was a street person. He has a lot of knowledge and love for the people who, you know, people nobody else really wants.
Okay.
And the hot potato here in Colombia, of course, those are the teenagers. You know, those are the ones you're scared they're going to stop you in a dark street and rip you off and grab your watch or your sneakers or whatever. Yeah. And so he was asking the mayorship if they had any programs for youth. There
Zero.
Weren't any. No. No programs for youth. For young people, from children, and for older people, mm-hmm. and for orphans. And there were programs, but there weren't programs for teenagers. Mm-hmm. So since that was, he considered that to be his forte. Mm-hmm. And I accompanied him in that.
That's amazing.
And especially our music, you know, using, he's a guitarist and a songwriter. I'm a flutist and I sing. Mm-hmm. I have a more formal musical education. He's completely empirical. Mm-hmm. Never read a note of music in his life, but he has the power behind it and the passion and the enthusiasm when mm-hmm. he sings. So that was a tremendous tool, sort mm-hmm. of a bait to bring young people around a sort of a bonfire of music and group therapy, mm-hmm. conversations. And we began our first program with, what was it, about 200 kids. The foundation called Dividendos por Colombia mm-hmm. and Bienestar Social, mm-hmm. they teamed up to support that program.
Wow.
And we did it in a big community center in the north of Bogota, in a community center that's in touch with groups of kids who are living on the hills. If you know Bogota, Bogota is mountains on one side. Mm-hmm. And in the north part of Bogota, the communities in those hills and mountains are the underprivileged communities that often have to move because of landslides
sure.
and situations that are, you know, precarious, architecturally precarious mm-hmm. and in every other way. So those kids began to come into our program, and it was amazing. It was just magical.
I'm going to ask you more about this and more about the way the projects evolved, but we're going to take a short break right now, and we'll come back in the second, in this next segment, and explore more these projects and this good news and this work that you've been doing in Colombia and over the last almost two decades.
Oh, yes.
This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall talking to Alice Dow of Healing Colombia, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Thinking of starting your own podcast? Not sure where to begin? Well, now there's an easy and fun way to do it yourself. Podfly Academy. Podfly Academy is an online training program that takes you from absolute beginner to professional podcaster in a series of online training videos, interactive webinars, and step-by-step materials taught by our talented panel of podcasting experts. With everything from setting up your microphone to how to create your own show in iTunes, Podfly Academy is the one-stop resource to get you on your way. Visit www.podflyacademy.com today to pre-enroll in this one-of-a-kind course. Podfly Academy, Podcasting made easy.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. And we're here with Alice Dow, and we're talking about her foundation, Healing Columbia. That's www.healingcolumbia.org. And, you know, Alice and her husband, Agustin, and extended family and friends have all been working in improving the situation in Columbia. And we were just talking about some of the projects that they were involved in setting up back in, I think, we're talking about sort of, I think, 2000, around then, involving sort of music therapy with teenagers, right? Teenagers in these barrios de invasiones, or what we would call here invasions, but these are what you would really refer to as shanty towns built up onto the mountainsides in really precarious conditions. Any heavy rainfall and houses will collapse, or landslides. I mean, you know, the kind of the terrible images that only get a few seconds of international coverage in the mainstream media. That's the reality of it. But so I want to know a little bit, Alice, if you can tell us, when you decided to set up a type of music therapy with adolescents or teenagers, how does that work? How do you do that? I mean, imagine at first they're not interested. I don't know.
It's not that they're not interested. It's foreign to them. And some will come around because they're curious. Others were picked out and picked and chosen by social welfare. Mm-hmm. They were already working with a group of kids in the north, and they sort of detected which ones would be the most needy, the ones that really were on the edge, the high risk kids, mm-hmm. the ones that were not hadn't fallen over the cliff yet, but were right on their way, and who could respond also intellectually mm-hmm. to a program that would help them to grow as human beings, because that's our focus. Mm-hmm. What we try to do is to get these kids to think and reflect, empower themselves. We're not the ones that can do the job, but what we can do is try to light that little flame. Mm-hmm. Music is very powerful in that sense. My husband, Agustin, as I mentioned before, he sort of has a charisma with youth. Mm-hmm. I always say that if I believed in reincarnation, and I'm not sure I do, he must have been a pirate or a bandit or something in his past lives, because he gets along with he has a certain rapport with kids who, you know, other people would either be frightened up or not give two cents for. Huh. You know, and there's a lot of leadership in those communities.
Sure.
A lot of those kids are leaders, innately natural leaders. They have a lot of street smartness as well. So they came around, and 200 kids came to that first program.
200? I mean, that's a lot
of
children.
That's a lot of kids. We did, yeah, and there were between, what, about 11 and 16, 17. We established a program that had different subjects.
Yes.
Sort of based on the AA model. Mm-hmm. Every month every workshop was dedicated to a different theme, mm-hmm. where we would choose songs. We had percussion going on. We get them singing and humming, which is therapeutic in its own way. Mm-hmm. And my husband has written songs, and all of his songs have meaningful words. So Then we would go from the music into group conversations. And that was when we really began to see, open up the Pandora's box, you know, to see these kids coming out with the situations of abuse, trauma, poverty, which is in itself a violent. Mm-hmm. Poverty creates internal and external violence. Because people are just barely surviving.
And I imagine cases of addiction and everything. Yes. I mean, everything. But you didn't, let's say, minimize it just to boys or just to girls. It was boys and girls.
Boys and girls, actually. And so we have still people with us today that were part of that first program.
It's amazing. And yes. It's continuous, I imagine.
Yes. Well, we keep in touch with the community, and many of those kids who were or addicts or part of drug rings or whatever, many of them dropped out of their gangs, got married, have decent families now. And some, if we go up there now, we'll meet them and hardly recognize them, with their wife and their children on their shoulders and walking around with their job and, you know, just dignified people. Not that I wouldn't say that was because of us, mm-hmm. but I would say that those kids opened up to a different kind of frequency and learned how to choose.
Yeah.
And to choose and to understand that their future was in their own hands. So after that program ended, which was amazing, the local government requested that my husband work with a very, very dangerous and difficult gang up in the same area. And that's when, instead of working in the community center where we were protected, mm-hmm. more or less, because we weren't actually in the neighborhood, we started to go right up into the neighborhood and work with the gangs in the neighborhood.
Wow.
And that was amazing as well. That was part of our education that Columbia has given so much to us. We were working with the kids, as I say, that you wouldn't want to meet them in a dark street at night.
Mm-hmm.
There was one young fellow from a family of 17 that lived in a shanty with a tin roof. His father was paraplegic,
mm-hmm.
and his father supported the family, asking for donations in front of the local church. 17 kids. They were all robbers and thieves. And most of them couldn't read or write. So one of them had been already assaulted and shot 3 times and had survived, like the cat with 9 lives.
Yeah.
And he finally was, he got shot during the program, while the program was going on. He got shot again, and he didn't die. But the wonderful thing about it was that, having gone through the program, he learned to give up the eye for eye, tooth for tooth mentality. Mm-hmm. Until that time, it was, well, you know, I'm going to go after him, and they're going to come back after me, and that was their life. You know, like, mm-hmm. actually 14 kids died in 1 year, just in that one gang. These are young adolescents. Yeah.
Very, very emotionally trying for you as well to know 14 children in a year with whom you've had some contact and you're working with. I mean, how do you personally deal with this kind of issue?
I can't say that I personally have been so much in contact with it as much as my husband has. I've been more on the sidelines supporting, writing the programs, making sure that the idea is going forward, that the therapy is working. My husband is the one that really rolled up his sleeves and got into the dirt and into the middle of it, you know. And his heart is broken, has been broken more than once because of his affection for these kids, and then seeing, you know, the things that happened to them after having tried so hard to bring them through. In this case, it was a good, solid, triumph, really, in the life of this young man, because he went on to have a wife and a family, and he didn't go back to the gang. And several of them gave a funny anecdote was, when we first started going up there, I would say to my husband, we would go up on Christmas and set up our sound equipment with our instruments and our cameras, and I'd say, you know, this is not safe. we're coming up here to this neighborhood with all of this expensive equipment. I mean, do you think we're supposed to be doing that?
Yeah.
I was scared. And my husband said to me, you know what? The worst of them are going to cover our backs. They're going to watch our backs.
Mm.
And it was true. They were like our bodyguards. The kids became like our, you know, they would stand by us, watch over us, warn us about danger. One day we had our car. It was like kind of an old car, not an expensive car, parked outside the workshop, the little room where we were giving a workshop. And when we came out, the kids had tied it up, you know, those plastic... those plastic...
plastic wrap.
Plastic wrap, like with bows on the top. And they were standing around the car. And when my husband came out of the workshop, they said to him, listen, we're giving you your car. Because we could have taken it apart, like, into 3,000 pieces, like, an hour ago. But here, we want to make sure that you go away with your car.
Oh, shit.
Things like that.
Wonderful. But I was going to ask, actually, if there had been direct threats against you, yourself or Agustin when you were involved.
No, you know what? We have never had that kind of threat.
Fantastic.
I think it's because my husband is very friendly. And he kind of makes friends with the community. Sometimes we've had issues with the community leaders who become jealous when they see us as rivals.
Yeah.
That has happened. But never to the extent that we've been threatened or felt endangered.
But this is very, I mean, this is very positive as well. I mean, what I'm seeing and what you're saying is that you don't want to say that you're responsible for the turnaround, but you've provided the stimulus that has created the spark to change these lives. And that's the truth of it. You know, these children weren't getting that jolt in the right direction, but you and Agustin have been there for that. Now, it's really heartwarming to hear this sort of thing, and you've been up in these barrios, which, you know, I hate to say, I wouldn't go to, but unless I had the contacts, unless I knew that I was going to be looked after and my car would be wrapped up in a ribbon and everything. But I thought this is a good moment to say, you know, there's been a clear evolution. You've gone from project to project. And now this is an opportunity for us to talk about your most recent project, which I believe is I don't know how many months old, but you've now set up a mentor program here in Colombia. I mean, this is something I've heard about in New York, and I've heard about it in London. But tell us about the particularities of a mentor program here in Bogota.
Well, about, 4 or 5 years ago, a dear friend of ours, whose husband was working with USAID in the American Embassy, put us in touch with an organization in New York called Youth at Risk. Mm-hmm. They've changed their name now to Unlocking Futures.
Okay.
But they came down here to Colombia. We actually organized a meeting inviting different representatives from the groups that are working with these communities, even the demobilized communities.
Okay.
And with, kids that are, you know, on the street and that. There wasn't a lot of receptivity to them when they came. They came and they did their presentation, but I don't know if what I sense now after 4 years is the program and the approach had to be converted into Colombian style, you know.
Yeah.
We had to do it differently.
Would they say idiosyncrasy?
Right. In other words, the United States, a very strong sense of you can do it, you are powerful, don't let anybody put you down. That doesn't work here.
Mm-mm.
Colombians need to be treated gently. You have to treat them with affection and gentleness because they've been so damaged. The in these communities, the level of violence, domestic abuse, is generational.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason why often it takes more time for the kids to open up and speak about what they're really going through. They've never had the opportunity to talk.
Yeah.
For example, we get the boys and the girls together in one workshop, and we knew that the boys believed in beating up their wives or their girlfriends, and then we would get them together in a workshop and ask the girls in front of the boys, do you want to be physically abused by your husband or your boyfriend? And then the girl would overcome the fear of speaking, and she'd speak out and say what she felt.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the young men, it was shocking and an eye-opener to hear the young women speaking honestly about the question of abuse, which is part of the culture here. So that to say that the way the program was managed in New York, and we also, my husband went to Puerto Rico. They have a branch. The same organization has a branch in Puerto Rico. And we saw how the program was organized, and we saw the power of it. We saw the dedication of the volunteers that were coming on as mentors.
Yeah.
And it was impressive for us. Actually, it was like life-changing for us to be in contact with that organization, because one of our frustrations was to see these groups of kids and not be able to do enough follow-up with them and to be there for them in their highs and lows to bring them all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them would come through. Some of them we've seen amazing results, but we always felt like we weren't able to do enough and spread ourselves around enough to be there personally for these kids. So when I went to New York for 2 years, and I worked in the foundation for 2 years, and while I was in the foundation, I held different positions there. One of them was to organize the young women's program, the young single women who were living in shelters in Brooklyn and Queens that had children. And I was able to see how they brought the volunteers on and how they matched them up with the young people, how that process happened, the training that the volunteers went through, the preliminary training that they went through, that I myself went through,
yeah.
3 or 4 day training, and then the willingness and the decision-making process. In other words, mentors have to understand that this is not easy. It's not going to be a piece of cake. It sounds wonderful and beautiful to adopt a young person for a whole year and befriend them. But then when you begin to see the issues coming out and their incapacity to communicate often, it makes it pretty, you know, it's a challenge. It's challenging. It's wonderful, but it's challenging. So I personally saw how you could instill that concept in the mentors so they wouldn't give up at the first, you know, the first round,
mm-hmm.
and how the whole program had a sense to it. In other words, the program, we invite volunteers to come,
mm-hmm.
and we explain to them what it is to be a mentor, and we tell them it's not going to be easy, and we ask them if they would like to commit, and it's been amazing. I put up an ad in InterNations.
Yes.
And all these young women just appeared all of a sudden. And the girls that we are mentoring are a football team.
Oh, yeah?
We began to work in... I'm skipping around here from place to
place.
That's fine. But we began to work in another neighborhood because we moved.
Yeah.
And we lived in another area of Bogota where the problems were just as large. It's an area called San Luis that has about 30,000 people. Shanty town.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are working as maids or gardeners or garbage collectors. Most of the adults are, and the kids are in a school with about 2,800 kids in that school. So we began to work with the school, and there was a female football team, and they came in with their, you know, they were all bedraggled. How can you say, you know, they had no shoes, they had no football, they had nothing. They wanted to play football, these girls. So we took them on,
mm-hmm.
and began to give them, therapy workshops and just let them talk and mm-hmm. become accustomed to us. And so when we made a decision, well, the decision to start the mentoring program began because... we had already been in San Luis working for 2 years with
mm-hmm.
children. We had about 100 kids that we were doing music, dance, sports, English reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
We were working with the Yamaha Foundation. They were doing music therapy and teaching. Well, that was wonderful. That was beautiful. But all of a sudden, the school couldn't give us the installations. The children just seemed to disappear into thin air. It was just becoming so difficult to maintain those programs going.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, at about 4 in the morning one night, this was like, 2 years ago in February, I got a call from our secretary, our secretary came from the very first program mm-hmm. that I explained to you previously. She's been with us for 11 years or more now. Anyway, she called us and told us that her brother had just been shot and killed in a mass killing in this other neighborhood in the north where we had previously been working. And we knew the young man very well. He actually stood in front of his friend. He knew that the hit men were coming after his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that, so he stood in front of his friend. The friend got away, and he was the first one to go down. 8 kids were killed that night
mm-hmm.
in that. So when that happened, we went to the funeral. And that funeral, that church was full, overflowing with young people. And you could just feel in the air sort of a cry, you know, for no more. We don't want any more violence. Okay. So we decided from that incident, that we had to go back and work with youth.
Yeah.
So that's when we decided to...
Create
the mentoring program.
And so you've got these, they're Colombians and international.
International. We have from Scotland, we have from the United States.
Wow.
We have from England, we have from, and from Colombia.
Okay, and they commit to a year. They cannot bow out. They have to be a year, and they are, I guess, with a player from the football team, or there are different people who are involved now.
No, with the girls from the football team, we match them up with the mentors.
And how have the experiences been? How's the feedback from, let's say, the girls from the US or from Scotland? How have they reacted?
Oh, it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, you can see. You can. Well, we have a video up on YouTube. It's called Healing Columbia Mentorship Program.
Okay.
You can see the mentors and the girls as well commenting about the program.
Oh, fantastic!
And their experience in the program. It's had its ups and downs. It hasn't been easy.
Mm-hmm.
But right now the program is about to end into this next month.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling of the whole program is like a family. It's been very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the mentors have, had their moments, and
some
of the girls have had theirs too.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been there to sort of make sure that, they continue and they don't get discouraged. And the final outcome has been absolutely amazing. We've just been so touched.
And so it comes to an end, but you'll be starting a new program.
We're going to be starting a new program with young men.
Uh-huh, wow.
And with young women. Okay. We already have a group of young men who want to be mentors.
So you're expanding.
Okay. We were hoping that some of the mentors in this program who have been through this year with us will take on the role of mentoring the mentors so that we can expand.
Okay.
So that we can grow.
Fantastic. But you've got people lined up.
Yes.
But you're always interested in people getting in touch.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely. Of course, check out on the website, because at www.healingcolumbia.org, so you will find all the details there. What a phenomenal project, really, to bring that down here. And have the authorities in Colombia been positive to this? I mean, they are aware that you're doing this because you're a registered charity.
We're a registered charity.
But how has the reaction been from, let's say, the political class in Colombia?
I can't say that we've really reached the political class, and we're not really trying to.
Perfect.
I'm sure that when something works, it attracts attention, but we prefer to maintain a low profile and do our job. And when people want to see and know about it, they'll come around. But we're not trying to recruit or bring in people who don't just naturally fall into the program.
Mm-hmm. And if someone wants to make a donation, they could do that, getting in touch through your website as well.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
So there we go. Important point that for the listeners out there. So if you've been inspired, I certainly have been, but if you've been inspired by Alice's interview today, talking about Healing Colombia and the new mentor program here in Colombia, it just strikes me as the most perfect situation for people wanting to get involved in Colombia and really committing to participating and actively, playing a role in improving the life and possibilities for people in more, let's say, desperate conditions.
Right.
I mean, that's the truth. So I just take this moment, Alice, and say thank you very much for being on Colombia Calling, and thank you for sharing something that's incredibly personal to you, because I know it's like an additional child, isn't it? This
is
the Healing Colombia, and it's been really eye-opening to meet someone who has, for 16 years, gone about this, and you're not on the rooftop shouting and hollering. You're just quietly going about it and making a difference, and that's very. I would have to say, my hat goes off to you, and any way that we here in Colombia Calling can help and promote and get the word out there, please, consider us as a friend and as an ally out there. So again, thank you very much for being on the show.
Well, thank you.
All right, this has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. We've been talking to Alice Dow of the Healing Colombia Foundation. That's www.healingcolombia.org. You can find out about the YouTube video if you're interested. I will post that on the website and on, of course, the Colombia Calling Facebook page. Do look us up. Write us emails at colombiacalling@gmail.com, and, of course, our website, colombiacallingradio.com. I hope you've enjoyed this enlightening show, and we'll have more in the future. So please keep tuning in. This has been Colombia Calling. So thank you.